Hi, group. My name is Tina, and I'm an addict. And I'm glad to be here today. It's kind of funny. We came in and sat down, and I sat out in the audience like I wasn't going to be up here, and sat down and said to the person sitting next to me, "I wonder who's speaking." And the person who was sitting near me said, "Well, aren't we all here to hear the same person, Hamilton?" Which is great because it takes the pressure off of me. I'm going to tell on the program committee and let you know that I was asked to do this just a few days ago. The person who was slated to share in this meeting had something else come up, which is also a good thing. You know, one of the topics of one of the meetings is that nothing is out of order. And my God always has a better plan than I do, even when, you know, I think that things should be done differently. So it's a good thing that I didn't know weeks in advance, months in advance, because I would have rehearsed it and scripted it and forgotten everything I was going to say anyway. I'm glad to be clean today, and I want to give thanks to God for everything. Let's see. Diversity is our strength. Gentleman was wearing a T-shirt that says diversity is our strength, unity is the key. I was thinking about this topic, and I'm going to tell you a little bit about what I've thought of this topic and then what my experience has been. And it's kind of a paradox or something, this thing that we talk about, you know, we're more alike than we are different, yet we look at the diversity being our strength. Forever, I have looked at the things that make me different from you since I was as small as I can remember. My parents are from another country and they speak another language. And so from the beginning, I knew that I was different from you. And I always look for ways to put myself on the outside. And what I've learned here is that those differences are our strength, and that we're more alike than we are different. I was thinking about this thing that I learned about in a job that I was in a couple of years ago, this Myers-Briggs testing thing, and how these professionals, whoever those intellectuals are, that came up with personality categories. I don't remember what they are, but what I learned was that they tested this group of us to categorize us in these categories, and that they used this as a tool to build working teams. That if there was a task that needed to be done, and I'm just explaining this because it was something new to me, if there was a task that needed to be done, if you had a team of five people, nothing would get done if you had five decision makers, or nothing would get done if you had, you know, five idea makers. That the key to moving forward with something was to have a diversity. And that's what I was thinking about in thinking about this topic, that it is our differences. The literature talks about the therapeutic value of one addict helping another. If I got here that first day in Narcotics Anonymous and you were all just like me, I'd be in a lot of trouble. The fact that we're all just a little bit different, have different experiences, is really what's helped me, you know, grow and work through all of the life events that I've had. I was remembering my friend Lisa, when I first got clean, was on this path of education. She'd gone back to school and she was working full time, and I watched her. I watched her experience, and I heard her, and she shared stuff with me. And at the time, it was completely irrelevant to me. I wasn't in school, nor did I have any plans to do so. I'm in school today, and this is some years later that I've now been able to draw on what her experience was. What I'm saying is that, you know, at the time, her experience was very different from mine, and I had little use for it. But as I've stayed clean and continued to show up, I've been able to use her experience. And so I believe that I will always be prepared for whatever happens for me. And it's through that therapeutic value of one addict helping another. I was in a I have this thing by my front door. It's a little placard. It says, "Do one thing every day that scares you to death." And this is the one thing I'm doing today that scares me to death. The one thing I did yesterday that scared me to death was to go to this Spanish-speaking meeting. Y no hablo mucho, pero entiendo bastante. I don't speak it very well, but I understand the language. And the thing that scared me to death was that I had the opportunity to read one of the readings, the opening, "Who is an Addict?" in Spanish. And I was scared to death, and there were about five people in the room. And looking around that room, I noticed that the one, besides the obvious thing that we're all addicts in recovery, the one thing that we all had in common was that, you know, we were Spanish-speaking or Spanish-understanding. And I got up there and I started reading and I stumbled across a couple of words. And when I stumbled on a word, a person lovingly pronounced the word for me. And I stumbled on another word and somebody else lovingly helped me along. And it reminded me still how shocked I am every single time that I get a bit of unconditional love where somebody shows me how to do something that I don't know how to do. And this is one of the only places that I find that experience. See, I'm one of these people who wants to know how to do everything right before I do it. You know, I went rollerblading early in recovery with a group of women, and I'd never done it before. And I watched a little video the night before on how to do it. And, you know, I wanted to know how to do this before I did it. And the fact of the matter was I got out there and I fell so many times it knocked the spirit out of me. And I watched the looks on people's faces as I'd go down. And you know, aside from the physical pain I was suffering, I knew that this wasn't something I need to keep doing based on the looks on their faces. And what I'm saying is, you know, that thing about... I can't do recovery that way. I show up. I've had to have been willing to ask for some help, to say, I don't know how to do this, and you might know how, or I know you know how because I watched you do it. I've watched people lose. I watched a friend last year go through the loss of his father. His father died pretty slowly, And I knew watching him through that one day I may need to draw from his experience. It wasn't relevant to me personally at the time. But again, that diversity, that we all have a little bit different going on, a little bit different stuff going on, but that's really, you know, the strength that keeps us moving forward. Narcotics Anonymous has saved my life. I'm an addict who believed that I would live and die the way that I was living. And what happened for me is I was able to, after several phone calls to the helpline, make it to a meeting where I met a woman who introduced me to my first sponsor. And I haven't found it necessary to use since then. And what's happened for me, and I say happened for me because before I got here, everything happened to me. But I'm not a victim today. I know that everything that happens today, I've made an appointment to be here, you know, the good and the bad stuff. What happened for me was this series of events that has changed my life. When I first got here, what I really wanted to do was just stop using. And what I've found is a new way to live. My recovery is a path of self-discovery. After a few 24 hours here, I'm beginning to learn about my boundaries, about what my rules for living are. I didn't have those when I got here, and largely I've learned them through the diversity of you. You know, this was a topic that I was thinking about, and that idea that that those things that makes us different are really those things that are our strengths made a lot of sense to me, but it wasn't something that I thought that... I'd share for a whole long time about. So that's really what I have to share. I appreciate everybody listening, and we're going to invite Hamilton to come up and share. Thank you.
Thank you, Tina. I'm an addict. My name is Hamilton. Our family. When I share, I usually share from the heart. And, man, I've been to conventions where the main speaker's pulled out his whole thing, and I was like, what the hell? But I do have a cheat sheet, okay? And the reason is because when they asked me to share my experience, Strength and Hope, and I am indebted and grateful to the committee for asking me to share that on this topic, I had just so happened gone to a diversity class at my job. And I was like, this is beautiful. Now, I'm going to go to this class, I'm going to learn something, and I better really kick it with the fellowship and bring up my experiences to you why it is our strength, right? And I'm just going to first give you something to think about, all right? And this is what diversity is, our differences. And it goes in our marital status, single, people that are married, people that have been divorced. You know, if you go to a meeting and somebody's sharing about their wife and you're single, you can't identify. Or if somebody's going through a divorce and they're sitting there crying, they all pained up, and you're single, you can't identify. If you're married, you hope you don't identify. You know, geographic locations, where we come from. You know, people come from Europe. People come from down south. People come from down north. People come from the West Coast. And you know how we get people come from across town. I'm from Baltimore. We always thought that Dundalk was another country. And it's funny because we always, I'm so used to wherever you're from, I right away will judge. That's what I'm talking about, the diversity, the differences that I see right away. Right away, before you even open your mouth, I have judged you by what you have worn, by the way you carry yourself, by the way you talk, who you're talking to, who you're hugging, who you're hanging with. Don't open your mouth and have an accent that's different from mine, you know, because right away I'm into the judge. So I'm shutting down. And that's what I'm talking about. I know that my disease lies in self-centered fear. And anything outside of me that's different and new, most of the time, if you don't look like me, don't sound like me, don't speak like me, haven't been to where, you're lost. Religion. Oh, boy. You know, everything. We have Christians. We have Muslims. We have Buddhists. And, man, we can get really hooked up onto some major discussions, especially a couple weeks ago. Well, last week there was a holiday season. One of them was Passover. One of them was Easter, Good Friday. Well, man, that can confuse them. Our physical traits. I'm tall, you're short, you're fat, I'm skinny, you're light, I'm dark, man. Income. I mean, these are the differences that, I don't know about y'all, but, you know, income. You make a lot, I make a little. Why can't I have a lot? you know, what makes you so different? I mean, you look at that shit. I mean, you know, you look at people who worked hard and become successful. Why can't it be me? They don't deserve shit. Look at them. They're an asshole. You know? Where's mine? And don't let anybody in here hit the lotto. They do definitely not have God in their life, right? Ethnic and heritage. You know, we have Italians. We have African Americans. We have Jews. We have French. We have Latinos. Then we have different kind of Latinos. We have Puerto Rican Latinos. We have Mexican Latinos. Oh, God. Your military experiences. You know, anybody who's in the military, you know, the Marines and the Army, they clash. They're different. We're better than you're worse. I mean, these are the position in your organization, where you work at. What do? I'm a waitress. I'm the head manager. You know, all that. We get crazy. And all these things are like the roles that we play, and it makes us so different. Or we think it does. Now, I'm talking about really outside of the fellowship, but at the same time, you know, that's why diversity is our strength, you know. And I'm going to come to that in a second. All right, here the easy one is our gender. Male, female, confused, right? There's some around here, I don't know what I am, you know. Sexuality, homosexual. I'm straight, you know. I'm bi. What day is it? You know. So who do you hang with? Do you hang with the gay people? Do you hang with the straight people? Do you hang with the bi people? You know, we get all into this shit. Don't want to be, if I'm straight and I'm a homosexual, no, you can't be both. If I'm straight and I'm around a homosexual people, do my friends look at me and say, is he gay? Well, what's going on with him? Let me tell you, I was in San Diego several years ago, and a friend of ours had said, all right, we're going to go to a convention. Come and meet us here. We're going to go and hang out afterwards. And I didn't know it was a gay meeting. Years ago it used to. Years ago we used to have all these special interest meetings in our schedules. And I've been clean for a while. At first it would just say men only, women only, gay. And everybody, it was cut and dry. Then we said that was a tradition violation. Because you can't keep any member of the fellowship out of a certain meeting because of a special interest. So then we said, well, you know how we are. We're real smart. We get around it. Not for men only. Not for gays only. But you knew it was a gay meeting. So now, you know, or now we just put down, if it's a gay meeting, maybe the happy boy meeting. But, you know, it would just kind of, or the area that it's located in. So anyway, we would tell, okay, we're going to all meet in this meeting in San Diego. Now I'm with one of my boys from Vegas, and he's a trusted servant of the world. And you don't know about people until you have these life situations. So me and one of my boys from Vegas, we go to the meeting, and we're with another friend of ours from Vegas. Well, we didn't know that our other friend was homophobic. We didn't know that till we got in the meeting. All of a sudden, we got to the meeting, out of nowhere, he just goes, It's like there's a lot of gay guys here. And we said, yeah, so it is. Well, what's the big deal? So we see our friend, hey, how you doing? You know, come on in. We sit down, we're sitting in the meeting. I'm liking this shit. See, I'm open-minded. That's the way I've always been. It's no big deal to me. I don't question my sexuality. I don't feel threatened by some man. You know, the guys were looking at, I'm straight, okay? Except in my fourth step, there may have been one incident that involved money. But whenever money is involved, it's an excuse, right? That, and if you say, well, I was young, you know, I woke up. Hey, let me tell y'all something. Y'all talk about waking up. I had a colostomy about, it was around Christmas time. I woke up and I saw some blood in the toilet. And I said, oh, Lord, you know, well, for men, that's not good. So, and for women, anybody. So anyway, I see the blood. I'm like, oh, shit. After I did that. And anyway, so right away, what I do, I'm a big baby. I call my mother and my father. I just saw his blood. They said, well, you need to go get that checked. Don't play around. I call my doctor. I said, listen, I just saw blood. He says, listen, it could be hemorrhoids, but you're at that age now. You're 40-some years old. You need to have them look at your colon because a colon cancer is one of the number one killers among men, especially in my age group and up. I suggest anybody 40-some years old, you get it done. So I call a colon specialist, right? So I walk in. He says, okay, what I'm going to do, I'm going to have to take an examination. You have to come in here. You won't be able to drive, and you have to have somebody to drive you here. It's going to take about a half an hour to an hour, and we'll give you something to relax you. Just, it'll be like a twilight state. I was like, okay. So I lay on the table and on. I see they got the little IV going, and I says, you know I'm a recovering addict, and I have a high tolerance. Right? He says, okay. Since I just wanted to let you know that, you know, because I don't do well with pain either, you know. You know, so he's like, okay. So he goes, nurse, start the drip. So I'm laying there, and I'm, you know, I can see it and shit, right? Now, they also had a TV screen, but he's like behind me because he's getting ready to do some work, right? So I'm laying there, and I look, and I see the couple drops start dripping. And then all of a sudden, he goes, Hamilton? And I said, yeah. He says, okay. I said, okay, what? He says, we're finished. I said, you're finished? I said, how long was I laying? He said, about 20 minutes. I said, 20 minutes? I didn't have any pain. I went out of there. I went home. Everything was okay. They didn't find anything in me. But it scared me. Because, I mean, he could have done some things to me. And I didn't feel nothing. That was the scary part. I would have liked to just woke up and went, ooh, I'm sore. But I have no feeling. All right, anyway. So we're sitting. All right, let me get back real quick. We're in this gay meeting, right? And it's all these happy guys. And, you know, they're doing their readings. And you know, I'm enjoying it. So they did one of our readings. And in this meeting, they went, jails, institutions, and death. And all the guys said, oh, my. Right? At the end of the readings, like they were singing it. Leads to jails, with a list, jails, institutions, and death. Oh, my. Right? And I looked at Rick, and I said, man, this is cool. And all of a sudden, Don, the homophobic, he's like, you know how body language is, you know? He's in the meeting like this and shit, and he's going, they're fucking with our readings. And I looked at him, I said, they? I said, aren't they like us?
I'll talk to you after the meeting.
Okay. Type of degrees, what school and all, education, age, and that's about it. So what does that all mean? Well, you know, it's a funny thing because when I got clean, the fellowship was very, very small, and it was a little different than it is now. We were all totally confused. We were full of a lot of hope because we didn't know a lot. We didn't have a lot of literature. We only had, when I got clean, the white book. We didn't have the basic text. We didn't have any of our step guides. But we knew that we had a desire for a new way of life and we wanted to stay clean. And we just all hung together. And we came from totally different backgrounds. And that was our strength. I mean, we had one thing in common. So what has happened is that as the fellowship has grown, all the little cliques could start developing again from our society. A lot of people have not had other experiences with other kind of diversified classes of race, classes of income, classes of religion, and we're starting to mix now. And I believe that, and I try not to get locked into this, but because of our fears, we don't branch out to meet other people. So what has happened, I have seen it, and look, I'm a realist, is that we've had sometimes conventions that have become, I would say, urban conventions. Okay, that's a little cliquish word. But groups of people have kind of felt safe in their surroundings. Y'all understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
All right. And what has happened is that because of that, other people have felt uncomfortable in these surroundings, and they say, well, I don't go to that convention. Why not? Well, it's in the city. But what they're saying is that there may be too many African-Americans there, and I may not be comfortable. Like, they're going to be hurt. I mean, all my brothers and sisters here that aren't African-Americans, have you ever maybe felt this, a little fear? Oh, well, then I'm the only one who's noticed any shit like this, right? All right. Don't talk about it. But anyway, that fear is there. And what has happened is that it starts alienating the fellowship. And we don't get those messages that we get. And we don't learn our good people skills. And we don't start learning how to love one another. And if we cannot learn how to love one another here in Narcotics Anonymous, we're going to fail on the outside. There's no ifs, ands, or. This is the easiest place that you can do it. Because you can basically walk up to anybody and hug them and just start talking to them here. And what I do is when I'm going through my shit and my fears and I'm thinking I'm different because my disease wants me to alienate myself. My disease wants me to feel different from y'all. My disease doesn't want me to feel like I'm a part of y'all, that I can't get anything from you and I'm going to shut down. And when I do that, then it can isolate me. It can tell me I'm okay. And it can tell me that I'm no good. I'm a piece of shit I can use. And it's that simple. So, you know, I say that here we should learn how to just embrace one another, reach out. You know, look, everybody knows there are meetings everywhere now. When I got clean, they weren't. When I got clean in Baltimore City, there were only two meetings in Baltimore. Two meetings. We had about seven, and they were around Baltimore. There were no real meetings in the city, and everybody went there. Now we have meetings there. Is everybody willing to go to any meeting? All right. Well, I don't know if I am, because it says that it has to be a safe, conducive place for recovery. I have been in meetings where people have pulled out guns and shot. I'm not comfortable with that today. I mean, I really don't need that shit in my life. But it has its need, because there are people who may not be able to get to any other meeting because they may not have a car. So I got to work through my fears and go to that kind of meeting. I've been in meetings where they robbed everybody. I mean, everybody got stuck up. And when they left, they told everybody, keep coming back. And look, that's a true story. You know what I'm saying? But you go to this meeting, and sometimes after the meeting, you feel like that was the best meeting you've ever been to in your life. You know, because we love excitement. You know, we love drama. Love drama. We're pulling the drama. Let some crazy shit happen in a meeting the next week. Everybody's there. You know? Everybody's at the meeting. Look, man, they were down there. They was fighting on the floor. And the last thing was said is, I'll see your motherfucking ass next week. And they left. Next week, everybody's at the meeting. Like it's a goddamn convention.
I'm going to hear the speaker.
Look, let me tell y'all. I was in Vegas years ago. Rick and I, we were in a meeting. And this guy, he had 13 years. And he sat in a meeting, and you know, like when I travel, I like to go to meetings everywhere and meet people. I just go and sit down, you know, and check out what's going on. Look at the meeting schedule. Let's go to this meeting. We're sitting in the meeting. So God says, you know what? He says, I hate all y'all in this meeting. I was like, okay, I can feel his anger. You know, I'm feeling him. He says, matter of fact, I feel like going out to my car right now and getting my Uzi and coming back in here and shooting everybody in here. Now, this is when Rick and I looked at each other, and we said that maybe we had chosen a bad meeting. Right? I mean, you could feel it. This guy was serious, and everybody in the meeting was quiet. Now, they knew him, you know, but I didn't know him. His threat didn't sound idle to me. And this is the kind of shit you read about, you know. In Vegas, there was a hero today. 40 addicts were killed by one addict. He was given a Medal of Honor. Anyway. SWAT was sent in to get him out of there, right? He was gotten out safely. Anyway, so I look at Rick and I'm going, man, I think we need to leave this meeting. But you know how you get paralyzed by fear? Like, you know you got to leave, but you can't? You know, because I was afraid that maybe if I stood up and he started, maybe he'd go, you! You know, so we sat there, right? So then the next thing happened. This is the truth. We sat there. The next thing happened was a guy raised his hand, and he looked over at him. He says, man, don't you come in here with that shit. If you angry and you depressed, that's your problem. But don't come in here threatening us. Now I'm saying, oh, shit. Right? He says, man, if you want to kill somebody, you take your ass out of here and kill yourself. But don't come in here with that sick shit and put it on us. Man, I was like, oh, shit. So then I was like, man, I couldn't leave then. Because I don't know now, really. And the guy's like, you know how you can just, the guy starts looking at him, stirred down. You know, I'm like, oh, shit. All right, so then the next thing is, he raised his hand again. Now, there's no cross-talking in our meetings, right? But they were going to let him cross-talk. He had a rebuttal. He raised his hand, right? But the meeting had gone on for a little while. And what he did was, he got up and apologized to everybody. And I want to tell you that I saw the miracle of this fellowship work right then. Because I had judged everything that was going on. And what he said was that he felt that what he did was inappropriate. And he apologized to everybody in the meeting that he was wrong. Now, I thought something was getting ready to jump off. But that's what I'm talking about, the miracle and the strength of we just stay around here. You know, it's like, you know, when I got clean, I was one of the younger members of this fellowship. You know, we need to, like, embrace the younger people that are here. And, yeah, their problems are a lot different than ours. You know, like, I'm not going to call them kids, but the young adults, they may raise their hand and they may be upset because they got a D in their class in high school. Or they were punished by their parents. And we'd be thinking, what in the hell are they talking about? But their problems are just as important as ours. You know, their living situations are too. Another thing that I have learned is that I can't judge a book by its cover. And unless I've walked a mile in your shoes, I don't know what your past is. You know, and a lot of us come in here and we are seriously damaged. You know, we've had a lot of past with incest. We've had a lot of past with abuse from our family. And that's not in my story, but I know it can be in yours. And we just never know what somebody has been through. So we have to be kind of just genuine and open-minded about what's going on with somebody and let them go ahead and share what they have to share. You know, and I do know that if we stay around here that we do change. And a lot of people come in here with a lot of sick shit and a lot of our motives and agendas are all wrong. But if we stay around here long enough, you know, usually they change. They don't always change. They usually change. And what happens is that people sooner or later just start getting tired of your behavior and they just let you know. And sooner or later, you know, we just have to work the steps. Well, we have to leave. It's that simple. You know, and so what happens is, you know, we will help one another. So, you know, diversity is our strength. So, you know, try to work through our fears and try to look at the person beside you and get to learn who they are and where they're from. When I was in this class, they made us stand up and introduce ourselves to someone who didn't look like us and just ask them a little bit about their past. And what happened was there was a guy who was an older white guy, and I walked up to him, and he was from Texas. And he told me that, you know, this guy was like, he was 60-some years old, so he came through the Depression. His family owned land, and he told me about the blacks that worked on his family's farm. You know, and we just started sharing. He gave me about what he was raised about blacks. And I shared with him, not really what I was raised about whites, but I shared with him, you know, me growing up in the 60s, I remember when I was a little kid, I remember segregation. I remember marching in freedom marches. I remember listening to Dr. Martin Luther King. And I remember that I asked my parents when I was marching these freedom marches, now I'm a six-year-old kid, why am I marching? And my parents looking at me and telling me, so that one day you'll be free. How do you tell a six-year-old kid to explain that to him, one day you'll be free? What the hell does that mean? You know, I mean, isn't that a given right? And we're fortunate or unfortunate here in America that, you know, all of us are free, except now the really economic basis. I mean, it's still the have and the have-nots. But when you look at other countries which this fellowship has embraced, there are people that are still enslaved in some kind of way. So, you know, it's about learning about the different cultures. I was honored enough that I went down to the World Convention in September down in Colombia, and it was a learning experience because their culture was a lot different than ours, but it made me very grateful. And one thing I learned that when I was there, a lot of Latino countries down there, they were just so happy to have us down there. Now, this was the first time I've been to a convention, well, other than in Europe, where we were outnumbered by people. Usually, and I was glad that they had some sensitivity on what they did. Because usually, when you go to conventions like tonight, they're going to go through the countdown. And when they do the countdown, they're going to go through every state in the United States like it's the freaking center of the universe. And then they're going to say, is anybody from out of town, any state within, you know, we have all of Canada, which has different provinces. We have Mexico. We have all the islands. They probably won't even hit any of those. And then they're going to probably hit every area in the CMP region. And they may even hit every area in the Free State region, which is, you know, I mean, it's nice as the convention. But when I was down in South America, what they did was they did all of South America's different regions, and then they just said, is anybody here from the United States? And I was glad they did that, because really, we didn't have to go through every damn state, because we're not that damn important. You know, anybody here from the United States? And we all just stood up and went, yay! And that was enough. Sit down. You know? And that's what it was. And the beauty was that the perception that they have down there, like, they think that there's a president of Narcotics Anonymous up here at the World Service Office who's calling the shots, like Bush or somebody, you know. Well, the president or the emperor of Narcotics Anonymous, we're glad that y'all came down here, you know. But it was really just cool just letting them know, no. We're all the same. There's no difference between, you know, and the language barrier and sitting in the Spanish-speaking meetings. And it was just a joy. And out of not having fear, I went down there because a lot of Americans were fearful for going down there. But we went anyway, and it was we were welcomed with open arms. And if you have that chance to ever try to experience any different experiences, I suggest you do it. I don't know. I mean, this hits us in all kind of areas, at home, with our family. I mean, if we're going to be closed-minded, I'm tell you, if you have prejudice in your heart, which is that means that you think that you're different or better than another person because of something, you probably got it from somewhere. It's probably your upbringing. And which means is that you're going to give it away because you're going to spill this kind of poison around other people. So then your kids are going to pick it up. And that's how it's a learned thing. And as long as we keep with this poison going around, everybody's going to stay sick. But if it stops somewhere, you know, I'll end with this. I have learned that, you know, like when people do say things that I'm uncomfortable with, I reach down inside and find the strength and tell them that I don't really like what they're talking about. Like if somebody is degrading gays or somebody is degrading, you know, I don't like hearing nigger jokes. You know, I don't like hearing from a white person. I don't really like hearing from a black person. I mean, it's the same thing. I find them, you know, I find them repulsive. I find them offensive. But if I just let them keep on and spilling that crazy shit, I mean, y'all been around people start talking stupid shit. I let them know, look, I really don't appreciate what you're saying. You know, sometimes they may tell me what I could do. Like the first step, fuck you. You know, and then you just say, okay, but you let them know how you feel, and they will become conscious of it. And it's the same way with men sitting around talking about women, degrading women. You know, we do that like we, you know, men still act like little boys. Man, look at her. Unless she look, I bet, you know, talking stupid shit. That shit offends me. You know, and my whole thing is, you know, do you say those kind of things about your mother? Do you say those things about your wife? You know, yeah. Well, then they got a problem. You know, But, you know, if we just continue to let it go on, then it will go on. And the last thing is, like, the banquets and all. They're usually overpriced, but I still go to the banquets. And I go, the food is usually the worst in the world, but I go to fellowship. And what I try to do is, when I go, is try to find a group of people that I don't know.
And you sit down with them and you just start talking with them and you goof with them and you have a good time and you laugh. And I don't know how many conventions that I've gone to and just met people and then years later go, you know, you sat at the table with us. We had a good time. And half time, I don't remember. But I like doing this because I like meeting people and getting out. And it's just, I don't know. When you have joy, I have joy. When you have sadness, I have sadness. And I learn from all of y'all. And that is our strength. And our other strength is that you got to know when to hold them and you got to know when to fold them. Y'all have a good, blessed day. I love all of y'all. Thanks for letting me share.
Okay, would anyone like to share? We can open up the meeting.
My name is Renee and I'm a recovering addict. And I miss Tina sharing, which that makes me so sad. But I thank Hamilton for sharing so much. He brought us so many thoughts that are in the back of my head, especially when you were talking about going to different meetings and the different conventions, you know, and coming to a lot of conventions. You know, I know a lot of people, other ethnic races, won't go to, like, the L.A. convention. That's the black convention, you know. Or a lot of people don't go to Rock Creek. That's the white area. And, you know, I thought about that, and I go to all conventions because, you know what, I got clean in a white area, and now I live in D.C. So that makes it really interesting. One of the things that I know is that when I do go to a convention, I do make it a point of going up to somebody of another ethnic race and starting a conversation with them. Because you know what? I'm afraid in my heart a lot of the times. But then when I start a conversation with somebody who doesn't look like me, who I think doesn't come from the same background I do, I found out that they have the same fears that I have, you know. They just want somebody to take a minute and give them a hug and allow them to share a little piece of their world. So, you know, if we all did that, because, you know, the biggest blessing is right here. We have that common denominator. We're all addicts. And that makes us so special, man, because we can always reach out and hug each other, and it don't have to be no questions, you know. The traditions teach us about our diversity, and it helps us live together. And if everybody in this room just took a little piece of what was said today out into the rest of this convention, just say hi to one person you didn't know when you got here. That'll spread. That'll really spread. And thanks for allowing me to share.
Thanks for sharing.
Okay, we're going to close the meeting. Can we please hear the reading of Just for Today? Someone has it. Hi, Alexander.
Just for today, tell yourself just for today. My thoughts will be on my recovery, living and enjoying life without the use of drugs. Just for today, I will have faith in someone in NA who believes in me and wants to help me in my recovery. Just for today, I will have a program I will try to follow to the best of my ability. Just for today, through NA, I will try to get a better perspective on my life. Just for today, I will be unafraid. My thoughts will be on my new associations, people who are not using, who have found a new way of life. So long as I follow that way, I have nothing to fear.
All right, thank you. And can we have a moment of silence, please, and close with...